Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Wonderful.
With great anticipation.
Awesome. Well, where are we off to today? What are you thinking about?
So I'm thinking about Earth Day, which is coming up on April the 22nd, our annual day of recognition and support of the environment in which we live in and the planet on which we live. And it's interesting because I haven't heard a lot about celebrations of Earth Day or events that are happening, and maybe I've been underground, but it concerns me that we don't. I would hope at this point in history that Earth Day would be a, you know, we talked about federal holidays a few weeks back, and I think I even proposed, like, why isn't Earth Day a federal holiday where we just stop down? Maybe we don't drive that day. We turn out all the lights for that day. We just have a complete kind of shutdown of all of our man-made activities and just get out into the natural environment and be one with our community of the, you know, ecology. I don't know why it's,
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I remember, I have fond memories of Earth Day from elementary school, but then I guess I don't ever hear about it that much.
Yeah. And so we're kind of, in some ways we're moving in the wrong direction, because instead of making it more of a global event, which it is a global event, and in other countries it's actually celebrated or recognized in much bigger ways. But if I had a vote, if I had a voice in the way things were run, that would be one of the things I'd push forward. It's like, if we want to really honor something that matters, if we want to raise awareness or create a culture that has their priorities straight, then one of the main days of recognition we should have is Earth Day, to stop down, honor, pay attention to the place that sustains our life. So that's the first thing on my mind. And then I was thinking about how individuals, human beings, develop resilience in the face of change. And that skill, you know, you might hear that term resilience. People are able to bounce back from trauma or from crises or, you know, a devastating loss. And resilience is something that we all have to some degree or another. But resilience is also something we can learn and develop. And looking forward to the state of our world, whether it's politically or economically, but more importantly, environmentally, it's very important that we work on our resilience skills. And not only do we need to work on our ability to adapt and to bounce back and to broaden our capacities to live well, we need to be able to model those same skills to our children, to the generation coming behind us. You know, as a grandma, I feel very strongly that part of my role, part of the only thing of value that I bring to the planet now that I've raised my children, is how I model for my granddaughter and her generation how to live well and to adapt and to be accepting and to carry on and to be able to thrive and function, because she's looking at me, as my children are, but she's looking at me. Hey, Nana, you know, are we okay? Are things okay? And so it's really important that I learn how to be okay so that I can model that for her. And then the third thing that I'm thinking about, and they all will tie together, is the imperative that we have to learn how to live well. Not just get by, not just accept, not just kind of bounce along, but really redefine, create a way that we can live well and live simply and live with intention and meaning and love and community while we're adapting to and accepting the inevitability of climate change. I mean, that's a dance that we are really faced with. And it's not just about, you know, the resilience of I can take this and off, you know, look at the silver lining or find the best. But really, what does it look like to live well in 2019? Because I know quite a few people who have adjusted their lives and adjusted the way that they are living so that they can adapt to what's coming their way, what the environmental realities are, what the political realities are. And so I know that there are many stories outside of kind of the mainstream story as to how we can live well and really feel fulfilled and connected and alive, even when we are looking at the destruction that we face at all times. And so instead of kind of focusing on the negatives of our status and where we're afraid that we're going, because I think we hear that all the time, I wanted today to be a little bit about kind of the positivity that can come with changes here. I'm going to develop my resilience. I'm going to look for ways to live well. And, you know, the adage that action is the prescription for despair, then that's what we're going to do, is talk about how we live our best while preparing for the worst. And I love talking about Earth Day in general because I'm so proud that Earth Day was inspired by Santa Barbara, not under happy circumstances, but that Santa Barbara and UC Santa Barbara specifically were kind of at the heart of the modern day environmental movement that we see, and also Earth Day as we celebrate. I love talking about Earth Day because, like Tyler, I remember my very first Earth Day. I was 9 years old, going to San Antonio Elementary School, and we had this big open area in the back, and we planted a garden, and everyone, you know, made little signs, and we started a compost pile, and I just remember being so excited about this whole project and feeling like we were part of something, like, bigger than just our school. The very first Earth Day back in 1970 was, it was estimated that 20 million people participated in that very first Earth Day, getting out into the sunshine. 2,000 colleges and universities, 10,000 primary and secondary schools, along with individuals. And so I remember being a part of that. And then, as I said, moving forward, I ended up going to school in Santa Barbara. And in 1969, there was a massive oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara. It covered 800 square miles of ocean were befouled by this oil slick, as well as all of the plants and animals and sea creatures that were affected. And this oil spill was so monumental that it impacted not just the people who were on the coast trying to help clean up, trying to be part of the solution, but also Senator Gaylord Nelson from Wisconsin was flying over the 800 square miles of oil slick, and he viewed this from an airplane and was so moved by this that he went back and worked on proclaiming Earth Day. And so the next year, in 1970, it started. But what's interesting, part of the history I don't think many people know, is that the first anniversary of the actual oil spill in Santa Barbara in January of 1970, there was an Environmental Rights Day in Santa Barbara. And on this day, Dr. Rod Nash presented a Declaration of Environmental Rights, and he read this at that first anniversary. And what's interesting about Dr. Rod Nash is that he was a beloved, and I don't know if he's beloved, but definitely an inspiring professor at UCSB at the time that I went to school there in the Environmental Studies Department. And he, I had no idea that, you know, 10 years before I started at UC Santa Barbara, he had written this beautiful Declaration of Environmental Rights to kind of kick off the environmental movement, and also to inspire UCSB's Environmental Studies program, which was the very first environmental studies program in the United States. So I'm going to read you a bit of the Declaration of Environmental Rights to kind of get us all in the mood. All people have the right to an environment capable of sustaining life and promoting happiness. If the accumulated actions of the past become destructive of this right, men now living have the further right to repudiate the past for the benefit of the future. And it is manifest that centuries of careless neglect of the environment have brought mankind to a final crossroads. The quality of our lives is eroded and our very existence threatened by our abuse of the natural world. Moved by an environmental disaster in the Santa Barbara Channel, to think and act in national and world terms, we submit these charges. We have littered the world, littered the land with refuse. We have encroached upon our heritage of open space and wildland. We have stripped the forests and the grasses and reduced the soil to fruitless dust. We have contaminated the air we breathe for life. We have befouled the lakes and rivers and oceans along with their shorelines. We have released deadly poisons into earth, air, and water, imperiling all life. We have exterminated entire species of birds and animals and brought others close to annihilation. We are overpopulating the earth. We have made much of the physical world. We have made much of the physical world ugly and loud, depriving man of the beauty and quiet that feeds his spirit. Recognizing that the ultimate remedy for these fundamental problems is found in a man's mind, not his machines, we call on societies and their governments to recognize and implement the following principles. And I'll just read a couple. We need an ecological consciousness that recognizes man as member, not master, of the community of living things sharing the environment. And we must extend ethics beyond social relations to govern man's contact with all life forms and with the environment itself. And it's easy to find this Declaration of Environmental Rights if you're interested in reading it in full. But I just kind of wanted to set the stage of where we're going to go today. I want to know how it is that you are learning to live well, even in the face of climate change? And how are your skills of resilience? And I've also invited a friend of mine to come on the show and talk a bit about his experience with UC Santa Barbara's Environmental Studies program, because when I was thinking about the show, I remembered, I know someone who was in one of the earlier classes of this program, and he probably knows a lot about Dr. Nash and our environmental studies program and our environmental studies movement. So thank you for being a part of the conversation today. My name is Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of the program by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show, The Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, by visiting Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to previous shows. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow me on Instagram, elizabeth_TRT, or join us on our Facebook page. As always, I look forward to seeing where this conversation takes us. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
Don't give up, I know you can see all the world and the mess that we're making. Can't give up and hope God will intercede. Come on back, imagine that we could get it together and stand up for where we need to be. 'Cause crying won't save or feed a hungry child. Can't lay down and wait for a miracle to change things. So lift up your eyes, lift up your heart, singing, mercy, will we overcome this? Oh, one by one, could we turn it around? Maybe carry on just a little bit longer. And I try to give you what you need.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we're going to talk about Earth Day and environmental movements and the environmental rights that we all have as being a part of this planet. And where do we go moving forward in a way that seems more hopeful and not just dreadful? And I'm happy to have on the phone with me Tom McFessel. Hi, Tom. Are you there? Hey, Tom.
I'm here. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly. Thank you for calling in. So as I mentioned earlier, Tom and I went to UC Santa Barbara around the same time. He was actually one of my brother's roommates. And you were the first person I think I ever met that talked about the environment. Or and so when this subject came up today, I said, I'm going to call Tom and get a little history on the Environmental Studies Department at UCSB and Dr. Nash and this Santa Barbara Declaration of Environmental Rights.
Yeah, it's funny because that was the whole reason why I ended up in Santa Barbara, was because it was the first school to have an Environmental Studies Department.
And how did
and
you...
It also seemed like, Go ahead.
How did you even develop an awareness of environmental studies? You know, were you participating in Earth Days as a kid growing up, or why were you even looking for an environmental studies department?
Well, because I got involved pretty early on. I would say probably as a freshman in high school. I was a huge Edward Abbey fan and an Earth Firster, and just got really involved with the environmental movement in high school. And just that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to stay more involved with that. So I went to UCSB.
And so what was the draw to the program? What were they doing that seemed so important to you?
Meaning besides the fact that it's in Santa Barbara?
Yeah. Yes, besides the reason all of us chose UC Santa Barbara.
Well, it's just, it was a interesting program in that you had to do a senior thesis, which is sort of unusual for a bachelor degree. And it just seemed like it had a lot of professors that were at that school because of that program. So I thought it would be a great place to learn more about environmental studies.
All right, so then let's talk about Dr. Nash, who wrote the Declaration of Environmental Rights. And I read that he actually wrote this as he was traveling across the channel to the islands and carrying one of Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence with him. It's very poetic.
That definitely sounds like Rod Nash.
So tell me about him, and why would he be someone to write this? What was your experience of him?
Well, I sort of became aware of Rod Nash before going to Santa Barbara, because he was also sort of a larger-than-life figure in the world of whitewater rafting, and I was a guide going into college, and he wrote a book called The 10 Big Drops, which went over the 10 biggest rapids in the United States. So I knew about him before going to UCSB. And then everybody that's in the environmental studies program would take Environmental Studies 101, I believe it was, which was his signature class for freshmen, where he stood up and, you know, gave these amazing lectures about the environment and his childhood and how he came to be at Santa Barbara.
And so what was your experience with Dr. Nash? Did you, you know, get to have conversations with him? How did he influence your thesis project?
He didn't really influence my thesis project, but I did go on a couple backpacking trips with him while at UCSB. And then the funny thing is after I graduated from UCSB years down the line, and I ended up owning a paddle sports whitewater rafting store in Petaluma, and he actually would show up at least once a year, and I got to reconnect with him probably in the last 10 years, which was pretty interesting.
And so how did your education at UCSB, because I would imagine that what Dr. Nash and the department was doing at the time and was pretty revolutionary, right? People weren't talking about environmental studies in, you know, as a culture as a whole. So must have felt like being part of a radical movement. So was the department as radical as the actual idea of studying the environment?
I think by the time that I was there, it had been going for, I think, around 10 years. So it didn't seem as radical probably as it did when it first started. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was still at the cutting edge of that forefront. So it was an exciting place to be.
And so I never asked you, what was your thesis that you did? What was your focus of study?
So my senior thesis was raising wild game in East Africa on a game ranch for the purpose of meat, and how that compared with raising cattle on the same amount of land.
And what was your end result?
Well, you can produce a lot more meat raising game than you can raising cattle, and they have a tendency not to destroy the environment that they're on as cattle do. So it was very interesting. I spent a year in Africa at my junior year, or 6 months, a couple semesters. So it was interesting.
And so what did you do after you left UCSB? How did you incorporate your experience in environmental studies into the life that you created?
Well, I kept guiding on rivers, and I eventually got a teaching credential for secondary for high school. I didn't end up pursuing that career. What I did end up doing was I did a lot of outdoor leadership programs with corporations and tried to sort of stick in some environmental stuff in those programs. And then I became part owner in a kayak, whitewater rafting store, and an outfitter on Tamales Bay running educational and kayak trips. And yeah, so I sort of, that's sort of how I sort of put my environmentalism into my career.
And so how have you, just two parts, how have you seen environmental awareness change over your career, and how have you changed in your perspective towards environmentalism through your adult life?
The first one's hard. I think people become a bit more jaded in general to the environmental movement. And as far as myself is concerned, it's still definitely one of the most important things to me. I think I've become a little more realistic in realizing that this is an entire global community that we're dealing with, and change can be extremely difficult. So I wouldn't say that I'm pessimistic, but I'm probably not as optimistic as I used to be.
And so knowing what you know then, how have you gone about creating a way of living well? Because as I know you, you live well and pretty simply. So what have you created as a way to live well and still kind of face up to and adapt to climate change?
Well, what I've sort of concentrated on over the last few years is I started a whole new career, which involved in catering now, which is an industry that has a horrible amount of waste that I don't know if people realize. And so I sort of pride myself on the way I cater. I have very little to none wasted food at all my events. And I've also just tried to simplify my life and just get rid of a lot of stuff that I don't need and live a lot more simply than I used to.
And so how has that changed your mental health and well-being?
Oh, I think it's done a lot to help my mental health, for sure. I definitely, you know, I try to get out, especially on the water, at least a couple times a week. And that's probably the main thing that helps keep me sane. I, you know, I'm fortunate enough to live in an extremely beautiful area up in Point Reyes, in Northern California, so it makes that easier.
And so my last question is this. If, given that you, you know, have studied environmental studies and kind of lived your life in the environmental movement and in different areas, if you had the opportunity to, you know, model for or influence the generation coming up behind you, what are one or two things you would want them to know or to pay attention to moving forward?
I would think probably the biggest thing that I would want them to do, start taking note of, is just the amount of stuff that people accumulate that they don't need.
Okay.
I think that's huge, you know. You just don't need all that stuff. And then secondly, I would want them just to realize that they are part of a global community and not just the community that they see around them. And I think that is probably progressing better than most things. I think people are realizing that, primarily because of social media and the internet. But yeah, that's probably what I would want to pass on.
I really appreciate you calling in, because I know talking on radio shows is not one of your primary joys of life.
Oh, for you, anything, Ben.
Thank you, Tom. And also, you know, you talk about catering. It's actually paella that you make with such creativity and beauty. And so I want to just say, you're just not catering. You're making food that is filled with love, and it's beautiful to look at and delicious.
Yeah, and it's fun.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you for calling in. This is Tom McFessel, sharing his thoughts on Earth Day and the environmental movement and UCSB. Have a great day, Tom.
Okay, see you later.
Bye-bye. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I've started this conversation about where we are in our environmental movement, our environmental studies, and our understanding of Earth Day, and how can we create a life in which we still live well? Because from a clinician's point of view, and sitting in front of classrooms week after week of students that are hyper concerned and hyper aware and extremely anxious and depressed about their future. And a lot of it has to do with their concerns about the environment or whether or not they should even have children. And if, you know, that's a conscious or wise thing to do, or how they will make a living or how they will actually live. I sit with this week after week. And as I mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the show, I feel like part of my job at this point in my life is to find a way to be okay myself, to adapt and to adjust and to find hope and to find things that I still look forward to and that I love and are meaningful so that I can model that for the generations coming up behind me. But I'm curious to know how you're feeling at this time. You know, are you feeling like there are things you can do to live well, that you've let go of, that you've radically simplified your life? You know, we talked about the radical cleansing of our houses, and we've talked about living with less or downsizing our lives. But what are you doing? You know, what have you done that has been helpful? And how has it changed or influenced your mental health or well-being? Our number is 805-781-3875. And I'm also curious if there's any other environmental studies majors out there who studied the environment over the last 20-something years, who even went to UCSB's environmental studies program, and how your experience was. Because I'm curious how it would be to see something from the beginning. You know, our environmental movement isn't that old, or maybe it feels that old to younger people, but since I can remember the genesis of the environmental movement and the first Earth Day, it feels very young to me. And so I'm wondering how other people feel about how we've progressed forward. Where are we in our study and understanding of how we as communities and a culture and a planet can move forward, knowing what we know, and still thrive? Because at the end of the day, change is coming our way. At the end of the day, we know that things are happening. And so how do we prepare for that? And how do we still enjoy a high quality of life? Because it seems to me just kind of sad that we would kind of go inward or depress in our actions, or just turn sullen in the face of what we feel is catastrophe coming our way, and then kind of miss out on those times of our lives that could still be joyful, even in the face of climate change. Because there's always been something that could set us back. You know, maybe not on the level that we see today, but there's always been something, wars and famine and change and loss, that could set us back. And part of the art of living, part of the art of being a human being, is how do we, in the face of all of the mess that we see, still find joy and pleasure and happiness and things to look forward to? And the more simply we can do it, it seems like the more joy comes our way. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're talking about Earth Day, environmentalism, environmental studies, people that inspire us. And I'd love to have you be part of the conversation. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. Tell me, where do the children play?
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hey, Cam, you're on the air. What's on your mind today? Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Inspired by the previous speaker, he had talked about you know, getting older, and there's, you know, a little jaded aspect to being an environmentalist.
Yes.
I think sometimes that has to do with, you know, we have to make money in this life, and sometimes falling back on something that we value. Like in my case, I spent almost 20 years building our home with reclaimed and recycled material, and I still make things out of reclaimed and recycled material that I try to sell, but there is a sacrifice there. It's not cheaper. It's sometimes hard to make a living, and being able to fall back into an environment that I and my friends appreciate is satisfying, you know. And I think that's maybe what being an environmentalist might be in the long run, is the satisfaction you get from participating a little bit in something that has a daily effect. Mm-hmm. It's hard, and especially today when such big issues are being faced, the challenges we face as a species is sometimes debilitating, you know. And so to have things, you know, that don't necessarily force us to make, you know, those monetary choices, mm-hmm. economic hardship and things like that are kind of what that I think maybe that jaded aspect comes from. That might be something you might be able to have other callers relate to. I don't know.
You sound so tired, Cam.
I was working, and I, you know, he was talking about being jaded, and it kind of, a little red light went off, and I try not to be jaded. That's my biggest thing. You know, I no longer, being upset, you know, getting loud, trying to convert people, change their minds, it's hard, you know. It's mm-hmm. There's probably great ways of doing it. I was never very good at it. But people somehow have to have something that caused them to get involved in the environmental movement. For me, like in the 90s, I worked in Hollywood. You know, the set industry is, I was constantly mixing chemicals and doing weird things and tremendous amounts of waste. And, you know, it was a dream kind of job for me at the time. But then, you know, it kind of set me on a different path. And it was good. There's no question that, you know, changing, becoming better, improving, you know, caring about the environment is important. But it, you know, we still, I think a lot of people, they can't get their head around, you know, making a living.
Right. And that's what I hear you saying, is that the double-edged sword is that you can have all the great intentions in the world, but if you can't feed your family, then the good intentions do you no good. Right?
Yeah. You can get upset about not being able to pay bills. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to be married to a woman who did much better than I did in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And that helped, you know, that got us through this really long building project. Because, you know, it's one thing to build a cabinet out of reclaimed material, and it's another thing to build a house.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, and we live on rainwater, which is really unusual. We lost 3 wells. These things forced us to become more engaged in the environment. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have known anything about water had I not lost it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So,
No, and I appreciate all your thoughts, because I think I feel like this is where we're at in this moment, is that moving forward, the realities of trying to live better, right, with less waste and more consciously, comes at a cost, because, as you said, it's not inexpensive. Ironically, it's not inexpensive to eat organically or to live off the grid and to be able to support yourself. And so now we're talking about a paradigm shift of, should we have all of these individuals trying to live their best on their own, or do we move towards a more tribal, community-based way of living, so that we're sharing resources and, you know, working together and feeling the support of the community, instead of what I'm hearing from you and a bit of, you know, my conversation with Tom, is that when you're alone trying to do your best, that can feel very lonely, and that it's the coming together that might help.
Definitely. I think it probably does help. It's just, you know, I'm isolated kind of in a, you know, rural environment. I work up here. I finally, you know, have got a shop where I'm able to do things on my own. And so, you know, like San Luis Obispo is 45 minutes away. That's where most people probably meet and things like this. And all of us on the planet, you know, somehow have to get together. But, you know, locally, that's where the, you know, touchy-feely aspect of being, feeling like you're engaged is. And I think, you know, to challenge, you know, maybe young people can do it better. Social networking is probably helpful. But I'm not sure about it. You know, I don't know if it is. It definitely helps us be connected. I don't know how much hard work people are willing to engage in, because it is much more time consuming to do things differently.
Agreed. Thank you, Cam. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts, and it definitely adds to the conversation moving forward. You know, do we actually have the will to work all day long to bring water to our home, to access our food? We've become very spoiled to be able to go to the store and get all of our needs. But if we're really thinking honestly about what it is to live well with less moving forward, it's probably going to be a lot more work just to live day to day. Our number is 805-781-3875. Paul, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just answering as also a fellow UCSB alumni in the Environmental Studies program, studying under Roderick Nash.
Go Gauchos.
Go Gauchos. It was a radical program then, and it was in the late 60s after the Santa Barbara oil spill, and it still has a lot of influence on the people that have gone through that program. There's a lot of personal things that I still maintain in my own life that I learned through that program that apply to everyday Earth Day awareness and the changing climate crisis that we're in. There were a lot of good things about that program, and my ears perked up with your other caller talking about his whitewater rafting experience and the program down there. Still doing a lot of things that we were taught in that environmental studies program about recycling and toxicity and water. And the one thing I'm calling about is that what Rod Nash instilled in all of us in his large classes at UCSB going forward, knowing that we all had diverse paths to travel, was to always use our vote to vote for the most ecologically sound choice, whether it was a measure or a candidate. And a lot of us in that program kind of nodded our head and agreed to that 25, 30 years ago. But personally, I'm still doing that when I can't decide on a candidate with my ballot. I go back to Rod Nash's sort of promise to each other and to the whole class that we would always vote the best way we could, whether we lived the most healthiest lifestyles and the most ecologically sound choices that we did. So that can be a very powerful thing for all of us, because we can't all build homes with recycled material or all have the same amount of conservation measures, but we can use our power.
So how did your environmental studies degree influence your professional life?
Well, it kind of shaped me to be, always have a worldview of what my impact is, what my choice of job would be. I went into the medical field, which isn't quite related. I guess it hasn't influenced my professional life as much, because I didn't choose to make a living doing that.
Which I guess is kind of indicative of Cam's call about, we can have the high ideals of our environmental movement and living environmentally sound lives, but it's difficult to actually create a life in the society we have that's environmentally stable.
It's extremely hard to make. It is. And there's more creative ways. Recently, I have a lot of friends who have gone in the solar industry, but when I was at UCSB, that solar was in its infancy. We were working on curbside recycling, which the city of Santa Barbara told us that we could not do back in the mid-'80s. And now there's curbside recycling all across America every day of the week, which is a great thing.
Small victories. Paul, thank you for calling in. Thank you for talking about Dr. Nash, because I do have such fond memories of my time at UCSB and feeling like we were the part of something bigger than ourselves as students at that time.
I'm glad you still feel that way, as I do too. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Curtis, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just want to make a couple recommendations. First of all, for the younger listeners, there's a couple of books that you ought to pick up. One is the Silent Spring by Rachel Carson.
Yes.
And the other one is Capitalism and or Capital in the 21st Century by Thomas Piketty, a French economist. Both are very eye-opening books about the state of affairs the world is in and the inertia of economics, how it is dictating our futures, probably for many of us, dictating not necessarily to our liking. So that's first. And then I just wanted to add that, the desperation people begin to feel just to survive throws everything out the window in terms of conservation, ecology, and those kinds of ideologies. And that is, I don't want to sound paranoid, but it seems like by design that the owner class of this country and the rest of the world wants it that way, so that they don't have the shackles of the environmental consciousness that they should have.
It's in a way, if they can keep us terrified, then we won't demand change.
We don't have time to demand change under those circumstances. All we have to worry, we only have one thing to worry about, and that is our day-to-day survival.
And also, speaking of Rachel Carson's book, The Silent Spring, I've been thinking a lot about the recent lawsuits against Roundup and glyphosates and wondering if that's our modern-day Silent Spring. Will that become...
Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad you brought that up, because one of the things that bothers me most about Monsanto isn't necessarily the poisonous nature of their GMOs, their Roundup Ready crops, but the fact that an entire industry, cottage industry of seed collecting farmers, has been threatened by lawsuits because Monsanto claims. And of course, those seeds, some of those seeds are the patented Roundup Ready crop seed.
I think I'm losing Curtis a little bit. I'm sorry, Curtis. I wish I could keep him there, because that's a whole other conversation about farming and food and people and health that I think we're going to need to follow up in the future. So I hope you'll call back around that conversation. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about Earth Day, which is Monday, April 22nd. And I would love us to move towards a national holiday that allowed us to step outside of our homes and maybe turn off all of our man-made conveniences and just kind of live within the natural world for one day a year, and see what that might look like. And I'm also want to talk a bit about resilience and how we develop resilience in the face of inevitable change and not lose hope and find ourselves in a place where we can actually inspire and still encourage the generations coming behind us. Because we as the elders have a responsibility to make sure we make space for them to also have an adulthood and a future, whatever that might look like, but at least have the strength and resilience to face it in some way. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Rick. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Are you still there, Rick? Hi, Rick. Are you there?
Yes. I really like your approach to to all this. And I've been involved in the environmental movement since the early 60s, and I have been designing alternative lifestyle products and eco-villages for considerable time, and I made a proposal to Cal Poly 20 years ago to build a model eco-village on their campus, which I think would still be a really great thing, but they weren't interested. I think, well, according to Ken Haggard, who was one of the progressive architects at Cal Poly at the time, he said they were just too conservative, too wedded to the status quo type thinking to move in that direction. But there was a lot of interest by various professors at Cal Poly, and you know, perhaps Santa Barbara would be interested. But the thing is that Cal Poly's got lots of land, and they could show examples of how we could be living in the future. I think we need to be living in circumstances where we can have community gardens where we can grow our own food. And there's a whole lot we can do to make the Earth sustainable, but a lot of it involves pretty radical change. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on that kind of technology, but there's, you know, it's slow going. It's an awful lot of work, especially if you're doing it by yourself. I think our whole society needs to get together and use all of our resources and, you know, pool our talents and some of our money. Mm-hmm. But it would take a lot less money than we're now wasting on, like, trying to perpetuate fossil fuel usage and things like that. It's, you know, there's been a real clash since about 1980 when the Reagan administration basically tried to reverse all the progress that the Carter administration was making in environmental matters. And, you know, the government at that point began kind of purposefully ignoring the technologies like solar energy and wind power that Carter was making a lot of progress with. And so the United States lost the ability to make a lot of these things, and we're now depending upon Europe and China to supply us with a lot of these products. I think we need to start making these things here. I mean, America needs to kind of make an example for the rest of the world to follow. And anyway, I'm getting a little off the track. I was watching some programs on YouTube by people who were living in eco-villages. There are some really excellent YouTube videos, and they were talking about, especially this village in England, they were talking about how much happier they were living in community and growing their own food and having, you know, community gardens and just the whole thing of people getting together and sharing.
And it's interesting, Rick, because we hear that story over and over about people being happier with less. You know, the more simpler their life is, the more just inherent joy they feel. And yet it's so hard to kind of make that leap. And I even think about my own situation with my husband and constant conversations about let's let all this go. We can live on so much less. But then in that little voice in the back of my mind, if I were to be really honest, is, but what if it doesn't work out and I can't leap back to the life I have now? And I think that that holds me up, and I don't think I'm alone in that hesitation.
Well, I agree. And you know, I lived in similar situations, you know, back in the 60s and saw the limitations. In fact, in 1996, I made a trip all summer to go to various eco intentional communities and, up in Oregon in different places to see if there was some place I wanted to move to. And each of them had shortcomings that I wasn't willing to put up with. And I realized that our whole culture needs to change. We need to make a global effort to adopt clean technology and lifestyles that really work. Mm-hmm. And the people who oppose this are the big corporations that are making all their money off the status quo.
Right.
So, you know, we can do things locally. But, you know, I think we could do a lot here in San Luis if we could all get together. But the difficulty seems to be getting together, finding each other.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think that's what Cam said earlier, too, that he feels a bit isolated. And Tom, you know, my first guest, talked about having to think more globally and from a bigger perspective, that the small is nice, but the bigger gets us maybe more change. Thank you, Rick, for calling in and sharing your thoughts. And Charles, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I'd just like to say that I'm a pessimist, that I just do not believe that we're going to be able to turn, you know, the world around. You know, we have a economic system that is predicated on continued growth of production, consumption, the acquisition of material wealth, which is very, very destructive to the earth. Right now, we have certainly an administration in our country that is totally, you know, anti-environmental. And I just say it's discouraging. Now, I've lived my life, and my wife, I tried to live our lives environmentally as possible. We live off the grid. We produce a lot of our own food. We try to make a very small footprint on the earth. We've, you know, things like solar hot water heater, solar rub, you know, we try to use as little energy, fossil fuel as possible. We try to drive fossil fuel efficient cars. We haven't gone to like electric because we live a long ways out in the country, but we try to limit our driving and such like that. But we've been living this way for 40 years, and I did it because I believed in it, but also as an example to other people. Mm-hmm. That could be, say, yeah, we can live a quality life, a simple life, a rich life, without all the accoutrements of, you know, our modern acquisition economy and our idea that you have to have as much as possible to be successful. Anyways, well, that's my comment.
Thank you, Charles. And I appreciate that, because I would imagine after 40 years of kind of walking your talk and being this model, that you probably hoped that more people would have joined your path, or maybe, you know, kind of made changes themselves. And so I can hear in your voice that it feels a bit, I don't know, that you sound weary. And then
I am weary.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I just, I think that, I mean, I'm coming back from Paso Robles, and I mean, you see, it's one after the other, these huge pickup trucks, huge SUVs that people drive, and, you know, but that are not being used for anything but to carry one person around. You know, I just, it's like we're going the other direction.
No, I appreciate that, Charles. And I think you also resonate with a lot of people who feel the same way. And so I guess our dance is, how do we live well? How do we continue to find that wellness within ourselves, even though we know that there's so much to feel desperate about? Jim, you're on the air. You get the last word today. What's on your mind?
Okay. Well, in case we get cut short, the main point is political action. I was there, graduated from UCSB in 71 in environmental biology right before they had the environmental major. And I went to the GOO, Get Oil Out rallies, and spoke at some of the rallies. And also was there, you know, for the riots in Isla Vista, where the veneer of democracy came down, and we were a police state there. Mm-hmm. So I know about political power, and I know that the reason anything happened in Santa Barbara as far as the oil spill was because there were a lot of rich people who were affected by that oil spill, and they had power, and they got together. And so, yes, we can all be frustrated because we do not know whether we're going to pull this out or not, as far as the state of the world and the climate. But the only thing to do is right action. And as you said earlier, action is the prescription for, what did you say?
Despair. Taking action.
Despair. Mm-hmm. And so getting together with people, going to the city council meetings, getting a movement, speaking up to everybody that you're around. How are we going to get all these idiots with their big pickups and SUVs to change their attitude? We got to speak up. Yeah. And so get together with other people and be part of a movement and support it, whether it's Extinction Rebellion or political action in your community. But it's got to be national, because these guys we're listening to, frustrated because they're working alone, there's nothing going to change that way. Our individual little stuff is not going to save us unless we change the system. So we got to stop these big oil companies and everything else that's screwing things up, plus we got to change our own stuff.
Jim, that was a perfect way to close us out. Go Gauchos. Happy Earth Day. Thank you for being a part of our conversation. I'm sorry I didn't get to jump into our resilience tips, but I will come back to them next Tuesday, I promise. As always, I appreciate your thoughts. I hope you continue the conversation on my Facebook page. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Take action. Be a part of the solution. And I look forward to continuing next week. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
control left in all devices. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When they ever come up with a thing like war, let us all the sweet of karma, let us stop the hate.